Welcome back to Senior Talk Radio here on 88.1 FM and WCWP.org. This is Project Independence and You. I'm your host, John Ryan. My co-host today is Ann Hirsch.
Yep.
And we're talking here with Pauline Wallfisch, who is the program director at the Behavioral Health Crisis Center at Zucker Hospital, Zucker Hillside Hospital. And just when we went into the break, I asked you a question briefly about crisis psychotherapy. And you mentioned, you know, somebody suffering a loss and they, all of a sudden they're hit with something. And they need help and they come to you. Does this then turn into a grief counseling situation or no? It's just to get them through the day and then you would refer them someplace.
Right. So that's right. What we do is immediate intervention.
Okay.
So we could see somebody one time and that could be enough, and we'll contact them within a week, follow up and see how they're doing, and they go on their way. Sometimes we can identify people who need more treatment, and we're able to refer them to providers either at Zucker or in the community who could provide the specific service that they need.
Okay.
Who are the people that are servicing? So in other words, is it a social worker? Is it a psychologist? Is it a psychiatrist? Can you give me an idea of the credentials of those affiliated with this organization?
Sure. So we have a wonderful team, and if they're listening, they've nicknamed themselves the Crisis Clinic Avengers. They're their own little superheroes. And it's a very diverse team. So we have medical office assistants who are trained to draw blood, do EKGs, do screenings for our patients. We have three licensed social workers. We have two full-time psychiatrists who are in the clinic. So there's always a physician on duty. And we have a peer advocate, a former patient of our hospital who has been through illness in his life, has gotten treatment, used our services to gain his recovery, and now is fully employed working with us to be able to meet with our patients and help to share his story to help them find their own recovery.
That's amazing.
Now, let's just say, for example, that there is a marriage on the rocks and the arguing is getting out of hand, which can occur. If in the midst of all of this, somehow there's a need, is this a possibility, or would you recommend a marriage counselor? How would you deal with someone that is either arguing for whatever the situation, or is in a situation where it's gotten out of hand and it looks as though the person is crazed for that period of time? What would you recommend? How would you deal with that one?
Yeah, so we're prepared to deal with all sorts of issues that might arise. And so the first thing that we always do is really just to do an assessment, to get a history. Does the person have any pre-existing mental illness or any emotional problems? What kind of supports are in the family? What the functioning is like at home? We assess for safety. You know, is there a concern about the person's safety at home or their partner's safety? And then, you know, really meeting with the client and understanding what they want, what their goals are. And then we work with them to develop a treatment plan about what we think might help the best. And sometimes that's individual therapy. Sometimes it's marital therapy. Sometimes in certain situations, there might be a reason that medication is indicated and our physician would assess that. And from there, we would work with them to develop a treatment plan that they also agree on and then help to put that into place someplace else.
There is a wide variety of medications out there that I'm wondering, is there ever a time when you prescribe a medication and there really isn't any further need for therapy? So in other words, let's say you're feeling a little on the blue side and the doctor says, well, I can prescribe something and that's it. Does that ever happen?
Sure. Sure. And so we have a lot of people that come to us. Some people we think don't need medication, need therapy only. Some people we think should start with medication. Some people we say, look, you know, what's going on. Really, the best treatment approach is both Medicaid, combination of medication and therapy. So it's really individualized.
But can I interrupt there? Medication, though. Medication, and correct me if I'm wrong, should not be like a lifetime medication, or it can be. I mean, shouldn't it just be to get you over the hump, so to speak?
So it can be, and there are different illnesses and different symptom presentations, and depending on the type of illness, the type of medications, there are some medications that are short-term, and there's some when we identify a chronic relapsing condition, okay, that medication is prescribed on an ongoing basis.
Okay. I didn't realize. I thought it was just to get somebody, you know, through a couple of weeks
right,
of
yeah.
therapy until they feel better, then you drop the
medication.
Yeah,
most people think of it like an antibiotic, right?
Exactly.
You take a 10-day course of treatment and you'll feel better. And, you know, for some of the illnesses, it doesn't always work that way.
Okay. Now, which I didn't see, for most people, is if they have insurance, Medicare, et cetera, these kind of services are covered under those things, or it's not?
Yes, they are covered. Okay. We take most insurances.
Okay, so mental health is covered. It's, you know, obviously it depends on the individual's plan.
That's right.
Okay, that's fine.
That's right.
Anne?
Are there any specific kinds of therapies that are different than, let's say, long-term, in that maybe this is a technique or something that you have that makes it more unique than perhaps long-term analysis is?
Yeah, so psychoanalysis is sort of a widely recognized therapy that's often years, but there are new evidence-based therapies that are short-term that are really designed to target the immediate symptoms and improve functioning. And so depending, again, on the illness or the presentation, we have referral sources available for a wide variety of therapies, some short-term, some long-term, some cognitive behavioral therapies, some more psychoanalytic, but there's a wide variety of options available.
What is evidence-based?
So evidence-based, in a nutshell, means that there's research to support that this works, right? So we've looked at it, we've studied it, we've measured, do people get better, is this on target, you know? So we use evidence-based rating scales to assess for illness and create diagnoses. And these are tests. Most of them are self-fill out 10 questions that you would answer that might, when we score it, indicate that there's a prevalence of depression or anxiety. And then based on your answers, the evidence suggests that this might be what's going on for you, and the doctor can further evaluate.
Wow.
I can, as a speech pathologist, assure you that evidence-based medicine in general has branched out and become pretty much universal in the various fields of medical practice. So evidence-based practice has really gotten its base, you know, in medicine, but everyone is now making sure that there's research and things that are solid to back it up.
Wow. I come to Hillcrest, Zucker Hillcrest, excuse
Hillside.
Me. Oh, Hillside, I'm sorry. Hillcrest is the nursing home.
We're
not there yet. I come to Zucker Hillside, and you're going to recommend me to go someplace else, but I may come to you for a couple of visits.
Yeah.
And then you say, okay, John, now it's time to move on, and we would recommend 1, 2, 3 people, go interview them and see who you like. And this would be somebody who's going to be on a longer term, maybe medication and everything else. Sure. Are you guys then still involved? Do I come back to you 6 months later and say, well, John, you're doing well, and keep going? Or like any doctor, you've moved on from the generalist to the specialist, and then you just...
Yeah, this is a short-term intervention.
Okay.
So we're going to see you. We're going to do an assessment. We're going to check on you within the week, see how you're doing, and
okay,
we're going to help you to connect to somebody who will manage your care as long as you need it.
Okay. The concept really is. It's amazing. Only because I see... That's like in anything in life. If you can get it done immediately, you're willing to do it.
Mm-hmm.
If you have to put it off, it's going to change. And this affects the entire family. Because mom or dad or the child that's having an issue, they say, okay, I'll go.
Yeah.
They can't get in. And then next thing, you know, the poor mother is on wit's end again 3 weeks later because whatever's going on.
Yeah, and it's really amazing. We have actually seen lots of families, people that come in together and say, can we both be seen? And we'll register husband and wife, mother and daughter, brother and sister. So it really does affect the whole family. And certainly if there's a trauma in the family, that also affects the whole family.
I agree. Because especially even with grief, I have situations where I deal with clients that, you know, you lose a parent, you lose a spouse, but there's children involved. Everybody grieves differently, and some can have an extreme grief situation, mm-hmm. but there's nothing that's I didn't realize that too. You can come together and say, because it's not just mommy or daddy who's grieving the loss of a child, the siblings are too.
Yeah.
Could be an aunt or an uncle involved. It makes no difference, a godparent. So, yeah.
And even outside of grief, when one member of the family's ill, it really does have a burden and an impact on the other family members.
Well, let me follow up on this for a moment. Depression has a symptom of not being able to reach out and ask for help. So can the other person make that connection with you, saying, I cannot get them to agree, I cannot get them to cooperate, I am on edge here because I feel that the individual does need some form of assistance, but I can't get cooperation. Now what do I do?
Yeah, so that's a really tough situation that family members struggle with a lot. And for our program, you do have to be voluntary. You have to be willing to come to us. You have to agree to allow us to help you. So it's not something that we can provide against someone's will. But we often talk to family members. We're able to sometimes give them some coaching to be able to get their loved one to come in to see us. It's an outpatient setting. It's a doctor's office. It looks like a doctor's office, feels like going to your regular doctor's office. And so usually family members are able to convince people just to go talk to somebody.
Right.
Does it have to be a family member? We're Project Independence, and many very independent people do not have family members in the vicinity. Can it be a neighbor?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We want everybody to be aware of looking out for these symptoms in their friends, their neighbors, their loved ones, their church member, somebody from synagogue, recognizing that, you know, depression is one of the most common illnesses. And in older people, it really usually manifests as tired or not sleeping or physical complaints or pain or feeling slowed down. And anybody can help and just ask them how they're doing, if they'd like to speak to somebody and get them connected to
Terrific.
Services.
Pauline, we're out of time. And I'm so happy you were on, because this is such an enlightening thing, and the services offered there at Zucker Hillside are just amazing, because this is the edge that might get somebody in versus a crisis much later on because they've put it off. We've been listening here to Senior Talk Radio on 88.1 FM and WCWP.org, and we want to thank Pauline Wolfish again for spending time with us this morning.
Thank you.